Welcome into Spotlight on DeKalb County. The Spotlight is on an author that we had the privilege to visit with once before. It's David Salkin, an author of Hard Carbon, a book that, in my mind, combines three of the things I love: diamonds, supercomputers, and the Russian mafia. Dave, welcome back to the airways, my friend.
Hey, Terry, thank you. Thank you so much for having me back.
You know, you hear those three things together, but it's amazing how you put this together. Just a great, great book about our Russian mafia coming up with an idea for a supercomputer. And you're timely as today's headlines, Dave. I know this was written a little ways back, but it's amazing what South Korea, you know, doing what they're doing with the computers. You were kind of right on the money with this book.
It's hilarious because I literally wrote this book 10 years ago. This was my first full-length novel, and it sat for a while because of other issues. It was a long, kind of a long story, but at the time that I wrote the book, it was complete fantasy science fiction. Nobody had ever heard of a computer virus, really. Nobody used antivirus on their home computers. It was, you know, 10 years ago, it was just a different world. And then the book comes out right around the same time that the Russians steal, like, 1.5 billion passwords and, you know, all this other stuff's going on. I just laughed. I was like, you know, is it really a crime, or are they just, you know, pushing my book for me?
I love it. Now, let's give people the premise. I want to be very careful because I'm not sure how much information I can give away. But one of the things I found so fascinating was diamonds are being used in computers, and I just Googled that. I said, are diamonds used in computers? And it said diamond-based computers would store millions of times more information than the silicone-based system. So this has been toyed with or talked about anyway, huh, Dave?
Yes, and again, it's a little bit of science fiction, but and I'm not a computer guy. I'm a diamond guy, but I'm not a computer guy. But it is my understanding that the two biggest problems as you go faster and stronger, more powerful computers, it's the speed and it's the heat output. And with diamonds, if it's a supercomputer, carbon, it's called N-positive. It has to be boron-enriched in the lattice structure, and it does make it a supercomputer. It would be like from going from vacuum tubes to silicon, it would be silicon to diamond. And the other thing is, as hot as the motherboard, in this case the diamond, would get, it would be irrelevant because diamonds can take a tremendous amount of heat without having any problem with that. So it just seemed, from a science fiction writer's point of view, that, you know, why not make the diamond the computer, because it does work and there's enough stuff going on in research. You know, the R&D guys in the U.S. Navy and stuff like that, they are working on this stuff. So in the book, you know, it's probably, you know, 10 years ahead of where we are right now, but I think it is probably the future of the computer industry, is if they could mass synthesize diamond thin films and make them N-positive. I think that you'd have something that could be used as a motherboard.
So, Dave, you've written 7 books, and I love talking to you because not only do we learn about the book, we're talking about the process involved. So,
and because I love you, I'm going to tell you that it's actually 8 that are published.
8 books,
I'm sorry. I've written about 12.5.
Oh, wow, okay. Well, when you're doing something like that where there's a little bit of science involved or a little bit of reality, do you research that a lot and just so you sound like you know what you're talking about? Or, you know, it's fantasy anyway, so do you just kind of throw caution to the wind and this is what I'm going to have my characters do?
I try and do a lot of research, and it's usually my nonfiction reading that leads me to creating a fiction work. So, you know, I find an article that I think is interesting and it stirs the imagination, and I'll just keep doing the research and get enough background information that I can fudge the rest and make it fiction. And you're allowed to take artistic license. I don't have to be a computer expert to write about some fantastical computer. But it should be believable to the reader, and I think this is very believable only because it's based on real life.
We're talking with Dave Salkin, author of Hard Carbon, again, available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble's, all the great bookstores as well. Now, tell us about this, Dave. The premise now is a Russian mafia leader. Tell us about the Butcher. I love his nickname.
Ivan the Butcher Belovsky is head of the Russian mob, and he employs a bunch of out-of-work Russian scientists because the economy in Russia is very bad.
Which, again, is very feasible that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that, you know, years ago I knew folks that had emigrated to the United States from Russia. They were working as, like, grocery checkout people. They had physics degrees, but they couldn't find, you know, their English was second rate, and they were having trouble finding work here. It's the same thing in Russia. You've got some brilliant people over there who can't find work. So in this case, the head of the Russian mob, and we all know around the world that the Russian mob is notorious. These are former KGB and Spetsnaz and, you know, some very dangerous KG people who are very well organized, well financed, and fearless and ruthless. So, in the book, Ivan gets a bunch of guys together to build him this next generation of supercomputer solely for the purpose of an international bank heist. All, you know, wireless money that'll be sucked into his computer system because he's so many generations above everybody else. It's not going to be a big leap for him to go ahead and do this. And like I said, you know, the Russians just hacked 1.5 billion passwords around the globe, and it's just like it's sort of like right out of the book. And I'm hoping I didn't give these guys the idea.
Well, yeah, and the premise is great. So, and then they use now when we talk about synthetic diamonds. My wife also sells diamonds, as a matter of fact. But tell us about synthetic diamonds, and how is that different than a real diamond?
Well, any synthetic gemstone contains all the same physical, chemical, and optical properties as its natural counterpart, other than the fact that it's grown in a laboratory instead of mined out of the earth. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, it is a diamond. It's just one that's been created in a laboratory. Now, the labs that are creating diamonds, for the most part in today's world, the diamonds come out off color. They're very either yellow or brown. They're not really good for gemstones in jewelry, but they do have a lot of applications in the industrial world, whether it's, you know, the head of a drill bit, or in this case, you know, the diamonds for the thin films for computers. There are a lot of things that synthetic diamonds are used for that it has nothing to do with the jewelry industry, but they do have applications.
Okay, very good. Now, and when we look at something like the oil industry right now, where the oil prices are going down, I never thought about the diamond industry, how all the worldwide effect and putting too many diamonds on the market. But you kind of explore that too, don't you, in the book?
Yes, I touch a little bit about how it used to be with De Beers controlling the diamond market to make sure that the prices were stable. I mean, basically, as a jeweler, you know, you're trying to convince someone that they should spend 3 months' salary on a diamond for an engagement ring. The person buying it wants to know that if I spend, you know, $15,000 today on this diamond, in 3 weeks it's not worth $3,000. I mean, there has to be some sort of stability in the market, and that's why diamond flow out into the public has always been somewhat controlled. And people say, well, it's artificially controlled. Yes, to a degree, but it's really for the benefit, I think, ultimately, of the consumer to know that you're buying something that is extremely rare. You take apart an entire mountain to get a couple of tablespoons of diamonds, and of those, only a couple are going to be really the best of the best. So in terms of commercial quality, you know, the lower end of the spectrum in diamonds, there's always going to be plenty of that. But the better diamonds that are out in the world, they are something rare and special, and that's why they're expensive. But I think in the case, you know, unlike the gold market, which fluctuates daily and people are betting on it and it's a commodity, diamonds, although they try to commoditize them to some degree with the Internet, it doesn't really work that way. A diamond is purchased for its beauty, and you can't really commoditize it the way you do precious metals. So in the case of the diamonds being controlled and their prices kept stable, I think that actually does make sense from a retailer's perspective.
Now, at the risk of checking my man card, I was surfing around, and I actually was on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and they were talking about their jewelry, and the one lady said she had all these real diamonds, but she kept them in the safe, and she wore artificial ones because she was afraid they were going to get stolen. But do you find that as a jeweler, do people want to wear their expensive jewelry?
Yeah,
first
of all, it's probably a misnomer. She's probably wearing like cubic zirconia or costume jewelry, not really artificial or synthetic diamonds, because they're very, very rare, and they're actually fairly expensive in the jewelry business. You wouldn't go out and buy a synthetic diamond, because for a little bit more money, you could buy the real thing. My customers, for the most part, they're wearing their jewelry, and the world has changed. It used to be we would sell very elegant, and just so your listeners understand, I am a jeweler by trade, and I have a store in New Jersey.
Diamond Dave, he goes by.
Diamond Dave, there you go. So, you know, in the old days, people would buy very elegant jewelry that they would wear when they got dressed up and go to elegant affairs. The world is much more casual. People tend to dress sportier, but they also tend to wear their jewelry with sportier clothing. So it's almost like an accessory that, you know, you could have a pair of diamond studs in your ears that cost $20,000. In your most elegant little black dress that you're wearing for the ball, you wear your diamonds. But if you're wearing just a blouse and a pair of jeans that, you know, and you look nice, why wouldn't you wear your diamond studs? So, you know, my customers, they're wearing their jewelry all the time. I don't buy into the idea that, you know, the real stuff's in the safe. If people are saying that, it's probably because they don't have any real stuff.
All right, very good. And that's ironic. I'm wearing my favorite little black dress right now, but that's why I love being on the radio. So we're talking with Dave Salkin, author of Hard Carbon. Again, a great book. Again, available Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all your finer bookstores. Just a fabulous read. So as our story evolves here, and what we can tell the folks, Dave, is tell us about that. So there's one of the scientists are working for the butcher and decides to do something kind of dramatic at that point.
So Max, who's the lovable character in the book,
he is an
old out-of-work diamond cutter who gets hired by the butcher. And he sort of knows the butcher's reputation, but he doesn't really understand that he's working on synthetic diamonds, because the rough that he's looking at is D-flawless, as far as he knows, it's the real deal. So he's cutting these diamonds, and then as he's working, he starts to understand a little bit more of what's going on with who he's working for, and he panics. He realizes he's a dead man because he knows what's going on. So he had cut this gigantic, the Star of Moscow, this gigantic pear-shaped D-flawless diamond, and he realizes that's his ticket out of Russia, and he's got to beat feet, otherwise they're going to find him on the bottom of a river somewhere. So he steals the diamond, and he takes off. So the premise of the book, and there's three things kind of going on at once. You've got the Russian mob chasing Max, and you got the FBI chasing the Russians, and you got Max running for his life, you know, hoping to beat everybody. So it is sort of a international globe-trotting thriller, and I hope the pace is enough to keep people up late at night turning pages, which is ultimately always my goal as an author.
Oh, and I tell you, the three stories come together beautifully, Dave. And I was honestly disappointed that it wasn't longer. It's about a little over 200 pages or so. How do you decide that, Dave, the length of your novel?
You know, it's tough. Obviously, as a thriller writer, what you want more than anything is a good pace. I never want to get too bogged down in minutiae and details that the reader gets bored. You don't need to know what color the carpet was, unless it's specific to the story,
right,
you know, in some way. But for the most part, I try to write. It's not a screenplay, but my books tend to lend themselves towards being a screenplay because I'm watching the movie in my head and getting it on paper, and I'm hoping my readers are visualizing as they're reading. So in terms of the length, you know, typically we go somewhere between 60 to 80,000 words is about a book, a full-length book. And you say it's 200 pages probably because you had it on a Kindle. I think in the hardcover, I want to guess it's about 330 or something like that.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was wrong. It's actually, and the actual book is about 275. Is where
okay.
It comes.
Okay, yeah, that sounds close.
But I was saving the part of that. I was saving it at the end. I didn't want to finish it. I was saving those last couple of chapters. Actually,
well, that's cool to hear. I'm glad you didn't want it to end. You know, in terms of when is the book over? I don't know. It always has to come to an end, and it's probably the hardest part for any author is to make sure you've got a strong ending that ties everything together, that leaves your reader closing the book and going, man, that was cool. You know, I mean, and it's tough. You know, you want to make sure that you don't end it too soon, that
right,
you don't drag it out too long. It just, it kind of feels right when the loose ends are tying themselves up. You've had your big, you know, climax somewhere in the story, and then you just sort of have to find a way to finish it up and make sure it ends well.
And Dave, before we let you go, I love the characters, whether it be the FBI, CIA, or the Russian agents. How'd you get inside their head? Because it really seems like you don't go with the stereotypes of a Russian mafia or an FBI agent. You seem to really make these guys real.
Well, thanks. I try my best. I mean, I think with any character I do my character drafts separately from the book before I start writing.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I want to create people and get to know them really well so that I know these guys inside out before I start writing. I shouldn't be discovering my characters on my fifth chapter as I'm writing. I need to know my cast of characters before I start. So, you know, the idea is that the characters are believable and three-dimensional, and the guy like Max, I mean, I've had a couple people tell me, like, oh, my God, he's like somebody's grandfather. He's so cute. I mean, but that's cool. I mean, I want people to either, you know, love the good guys and really hate the bad guys. And Ivan, the butcher, he's a violent, sociopathic,
yes,
megalomaniac, and it doesn't take too long to really worry about this dude. He's dark, you know. He's a he's a very sinister person. But, you know, that's real life. I mean, you know, watch the news, and there's plenty of crazy people out there. So
it really is. And I'm certainly intrigued by the fact that this was your first novel, so then when you kind of put it away for a while, Dave, and then went back to it.
Yeah, it's a funny story. Well, I'd been reading a trade magazine called Gems and Gemology, and it was an article about synthetic diamond thin films. And it was a really interesting article, very technical article. But when I got all done reading it, I'm like, man, this could be a great novel, I mean, a great idea for a book. And I must have said it out loud one too many times in front of my wife. And she goes, would you just write the damn book already? And I laugh. I was like, you know, I've never really tried to do that, but I've been a writer all my whole life. And I just said, I'm going to do it. So I sat down and I wrote a book. It took me a complete year to do it. I wasn't very organized. It was a learning experience as I went along. And when I got all finished, I did the editing and everything, and I gave it to a couple of people to read. And I said, just be brutally honest. And everybody said, you know, this is as good as anything I've ever read in a bookstore. Why don't you get this published? And then began the hunt to try and get it published. And then I started working on my next one, because once you do one book and you realize that you can actually write a book, might as well keep going, because I have plenty more ideas. So, and I've been writing ever since. That started in 2005, and here I am 10 years later with 8 published books out, and I've got a contract for 3 more this year, so it's been busy.
Well, the sky's the limit for you, Dave. I tell you, I feel like I'm on board of it, like on the ground floor of something that's about to explode, and we're very great.
I hope you're right, and you're not on the ground floor of something that's only going to the first floor.
But I remember a great quote that when I was a journalism major back in college was that I hate to write, but I love to have written, and it's got to be.
That is so true. You know, actually, I like to write. I hate to edit.
Yeah, because I remember that with the magic marker with my teacher going through all my fine written prose there. But listen, Dave, it's wonderful, the books you've written. Again, we appreciate you getting them to us. Let's remind people they can get this wonderful book, Hard Carbon, at, Amazon or Barnes & Noble? What's
it's
the best
way? Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Kobo Books and wherever fine books are sold. And if you go anywhere online and you put my name in, David M. Salkin, you will see the list of the 8 books that are available. Deep Black Sea came out maybe 3 months ago or so. That's probably been my best-selling book I've ever written, and probably one of my personal favorites. More of a sci-fi horror kind of a deep-sea adventure, but
which would also make a great movie.
Sequel to that right now as well.
Well, we're looking forward to that, Dave. Again, I love the stuff you've written, and I continue to write. I know you don't like to edit, but do some editing and get more books out. Will you, my friend? We look forward to visiting again real soon.
Thank you so much, Radio Man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I appreciate you having me on your show.
Dave Salkin, our guest, author of Hard Carbon.